begins this month on October 17th. Since we have not finished that project yet, we're still working on research and
the preceding program was a pre-recorded presentation of WUSB Stony Brook.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Chatterbox, the weekly call-in program where we talk about, just about anything, actually. I'm Eric Corley, and we'll be chattering away until about 3:30. I'd like to remind you that throughout the week at this time, we also have other call-in programs, every single weekday, in fact. Tomorrow at this time, you can hear Art Diedrich, and It's Your Business, as he chats with local business people about various business items. So make sure you tune in for that. On Wednesday, it's Second Bloom with Barbara Bloom, and she'll be talking about all kinds of health-related topics for senior citizens. Thursdays, Primary with Jim Caligiuri, and that has to do with all kinds of interesting music coming out these days. And on Friday, Good Afternoon Long Island with Bill Camarda. So all week long, we've got something for you here on USB. Well, in the news today, just glancing over something, I noticed that the alleged supplier of more than 50 pounds of cocaine seized over the weekend was ordered held on $75 million bail Monday, and his three co-defendants held on $50 million each at arraignment in Hopog. And that, according to the Suffolk County DA's office, is the largest bail ever set in Suffolk County history. So history was made today in Suffolk County. $75 million bail. And I don't know if they're going to take a check on that one. My guest today is someone who's actually already been on the air today as a kind of a surprise this morning. Those of you who have listened to this radio station for many years may recall the voice of John Vernile. And John has visited us from his home in Massachusetts, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, somewhere in Massachusetts.
What's the name of that beautiful little town up there?
Oh, it's Belchertown.
Belchertown. Yeah. That has a lovely ring to it.
It's by Springfield, Holyoke, Chicopee, and Amherst. Uh-huh. It's about 50 miles from Athol.
If Sloatsburg wasn't in New York, I would suggest it be there.
Very close.
Yeah.
If Pittsfield is right by there also.
Well, how do you like it up there?
Oh, it's kind of nice. Different sort of development that I guess economic relationships are a little different out there, and people, you know, they're pretty set in their ways generally, except for the university community, which is right by there.
It is
the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, which is sort of like Stony Brook here, except there's about another 10,000 more people in the area.
Oh, 10,000 more, huh?
Oh, yeah, 25,000 people. It's an amazing sum, and they have a lot of high-rise dorms there, and I guess the town's it's a strange sort of area because it's, I guess, Belchertown and Amherst and surrounding area around Amherst. It's a little different than the rest of Massachusetts. Massachusetts people tend to be, I guess, small town people, fairly friendly and open.
Conservative?
I wouldn't say so. That's the funny thing about it. Massachusetts is an interesting community because their perspective is, I guess, in a sense, libertarian, but they're more democratic in the true Jefferson-like spirit.
Libertarian, that's the to hell with government philosophy, sort of.
Well,
we can do whatever we want.
It's a laissez-faire view.
Yeah.
The Libertarian Party itself, yes, that's a that's more of a, you know, the hell with government, get it, government off our backs. It's pretty much what the conservatives are trying to do today.
Sounds like what the socialists are saying, too, at some points.
Well, they were calling them anarchists 40 years ago. It's funny.
It is. They don't seem like anarchists. Not the kind of anarchists I know, anyway.
No, well, they have particular interests in mind. And, of course, when you think of, well, think about anarchy. And originally, as it was a party affiliation, back in the 30s and the 20s and 30s, it was a little more, I guess, socially oriented. It was a bit socialist leftist in a sense. While this anarchism, as far as I guess what I get the impression of in as libertarians, is a little more towards the if you have enough money to guarantee your rights, you could certainly guarantee your rights and get the government off our backs, especially when it's on our backs as far as making money. That's more of a libertarian approach. Uh-huh. The more right, the more, more on the radical right end, except they, you know, it's pretty much what the Reagan people are interested in these days, except they don't come out and say it as such.
Yeah,
they just call it deregulation, get the red tape out of government.
Well, I remember seeing the Libertarian ticket for the last presidential election. I believe they had a guy named Ed Clark running.
Yeah, Clark.
And it was pretty funny, some of the things they were saying. Well, not funny, but just, you know, interesting, unusual. They were saying things like people have the right to commit suicide and things along that line that just most people don't really talk about all that much. And it's kind of it kind of hits you when someone actually says something like that.
Well, they had a few other things to, I guess, get rid of all regulations towards that cocaine story, for instance. People do have the right to take any drugs they want.
Yeah, that was one of them. That was one of them.
And I have the right to market anything I choose to. In other words, if I wanted to market a tonic that makes you grow 4 feet, I could go about doing that.
Okay, how do they feel about prostitution?
That's fine.
Prostitution's fine.
That, I remember that was another end of it.
Abortion?
Yes, on demand.
Uh-huh. Let's see, murder?
I don't, you see, that this is where the lines, you see, that's where things get kind of funny. Of course, they don't support that. And this is where the funny thing comes, because obviously we need laws. It's been a whole, thousands upon thousands of years where we've actually, codified, even generated laws and ways of going about doing things. And, you know, it's absurd to think that you're going to deregulate things to anarchy. It's absurd. You know, unless we all become,
At this stage, anyway, at this stage, mankind needs government.
Yes.
But do you think that's going to last forever?
In a lot of respects, it has to, because there's some services that will always, that will always need. That,
such as?
Keeping up roads, sewer systems. And
well, then how about if everybody just did their part and kept the roads up?
Well,
kept up their part of the road.
Well, we'd have a funny road system, because I know I like concrete. And
well, you're basing that statement on the fact that people wouldn't do an equal amount of work, but if we could be assured that everybody would pitch in and do their share willingly.
That's the end result of the Marxist utopia, uh-huh. is after communism there's anarchy, and I don't buy that. I personally don't buy it. I don't think it's possible. It's great to have things. People need things to find. I mean, we rely on them. I mean, we go for things that give us definition. I mean, we see ourselves in terms of our jobs, our political affiliations, even our religions. I mean, we need something to really get ourselves into. We know where we're at. Because, I mean, life is all over the place. I mean, interpretations.
Yeah,
and
that's a good quote. Life is all over the place.
Yeah, it's all over
the
place. Can't really figure out exactly where it is.
Yeah, where it begins, where it ends. I heard a good quote the other day. Let me see if I can remember it. Let's see. What is it? Life is a bitch, and afterwards you die. Yeah, that's a good one. I forget who told me that, but it was a goodie.
Well, my best piece of graffiti, as far as that's concerned, is there was a... it said, "Stop this planet, I want to get off." And this was a little man sitting on the planet, and it was spinning it around, and someone penciled in on the side, said, "Sorry, this is an express planet. Not going anywhere really quickly."
Yeah, that's certainly true, in some respects, anyway. Well, let me just give out the phone number. Our phone number is area code 516-246-7901. If you want to give us a call and speak on the air about whatever is on your mind,
anarchy.
Feel free. Anarchy, anything, really. We don't have to stick to a particular subject, but, yeah, anarchy. Okay, that's anarchy in a sense. 246-7901. Now, Up there in Massachusetts, you mentioned that you were, in fact, picking up this radio station.
Oh, yeah. We fly up there. I guess it's no more than 100 miles as the crow flies, directly north of Stony Brook. Our signal really flies, and that's actually our second, our less powerful lobe than the, let me explain the term lobe, for our listeners, radio signals.
I don't know it either, so okay. Explain it for me
okay,
as well.
Fine. Radio signals, they can go out in all directions, or they could just be more powerful in a certain area. Well, USB, we have three lobes. One, the most powerful lobe goes out towards Montauk. So in other words, that's more east, and the one towards the city is the least powerful. And we have one going north into Connecticut. Matter of fact, we're very powerful in the southern end of Connecticut. Mm-hmm. I'm sure a lot of people in Connecticut are listening right now. Maybe more than Long Island.
How are we to the east?
To the east.
Atlantic Ocean, that kind of thing.
We get into the South Shore. I guess our signal gets a little fuzzy after the Hamptons. And on the North Shore, you can go all the way out, almost to Orient. I know that. And in Connecticut, it's all the way from Stanford on into New London, I guess to parts of New London. And all the way up into the middle of Connecticut. At night, of course, it's a lot better because radio, especially when people sign off the air, there is less interference, and radio goes better. Radio waves travel much easier, I guess, at night. Uh-huh. There's less solar interference noise.
I was thinking of the Russian trawlers out there that I'd like to be reaching. Seafaring boats.
You know, I had a shark for the first time the other day, but that's neither here nor there.
We have a call, and I'm going to attempt to launch us into delay.
Delay.
So you've been through delay, so don't be scared by it, John.
Oh, I'm not.
Okay, then away we go.
Back to the phones, 246-7901.
Oh, we have to turn the device on.
Okay.
Oh, we forgot.
Here
to
we are. Boy, I feel kind of silly. First, I forgot to throw the switch. Then, I forgot to turn the power on.
Oh, but it's okay.
Well, here we are. Didn't quite make it that time, but we do have a call. And before we make total fools of ourselves, let's go to the call. Oops, I forgot to put the speaker next to the micro.
Oh, my God.
I was not prepared today. That's what it boils down to.
Well, I had shark the other day. I wanted to tell you about that with... And I was surprised. It tasted really, really, really good. Sort of like steak. But anyway, let's go to our call.
That's strange.
It was a 7-second delay on my part.
Okay. USB, you're on the air, I think.
Yes, this is in response to what you had said at the beginning, concerning the libertarian ticket and the ideas of laws. And I think it was Mr. Crawley, that had mentioned something very interesting about people having the right to commit suicide. You raised that question. And I'm just calling to make a comment concerning the fact that in ancient Greece, in ancient political systems, an individual would appear before a council, and if he or she had a legitimate case to take one's own life, it was granted, and it was done in a place called an asylum. That was actually the original term. I just figured I'd mention that as kind of something that's perhaps interesting, and I just, like I said, I just wanted to say that.
And the Romans considered it an honorable way to get out of being in some sort of trouble, to take one's own life. You didn't even have to appear before a council.
I think the Japanese are into that, too, with their harikiri and all that.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Well, thanks for calling, sir.
Okay.
Enlightening us on that matter. Our number is 246-7901. And, it's libertarians. They're pretty interesting. But apart from the libertarians, there are... Who else? Who else do we have?
As far
political
as...
Political parties.
Oh.
The strange ones, I mean.
Well, you have the Citizens Party, which is a growing party.
Is that still around?
Oh, yeah.
It was Barry Commoner last time.
You know, I got a...
According to the polls... He picked up exactly 0% of the vote, which is kind of unusual because I know quite a few people who voted for him.
I know I did.
Yeah, and they don't, at presidential election time, they don't tell you what these other people are doing. They just tell you the big guys, and maybe 4 or 5 days later, you'll see in tiny print somewhere the percentage that these little parties got.
Well, speaking of the Citizens Party, no, that something that has yet to happen to me as a member of the Democratic Party. I know they do this, but I haven't gotten any questionnaires as far as what I like about the party, what I'd like to see changed, what are my opinions on things. I know the Democratic Party does this, but the Citizens Party sent out a number of matter of fact, they took out ads in the local progressive newspapers and asked questions about, of course they were multiple choice, so they could be coded easily, but asked me how I felt on a number of environmental, political, as far as war questions, mm-hmm. national policies, and that was I kind of liked that. It was a little different than the Democratic Party. Out of the things I've seen, the questionnaires, they tend to be very, this is the funny thing about American politics. You have the Democrats and the Republicans, and the spectrum as far as the political spectrum is not very far between them, and it's,
oh, not at all.
And they make it seem as though that is the whole political spectrum in America.
Well, what really gets me, this has gotten me for quite a while, is people who never cross party lines, regardless. For instance, I know people who are vigorously anti-Shoreham, Shoreham Nuclear Power Plant here on Long Island, and it turns out that the county executive, Peter Culhallan, is fiercely against that plant ever opening. And the Democrat challenger is saying that we're going to have to learn to live with it. And I think the only reason he's saying that is because he's got to say something other than what the incumbent is saying. So all these people who are against Shoreham but are Democrats will not cross lines to vote for the Republican, even though he is against the plant too. They'll vote for the plant because a Democrat is voting for the plant. And it just seems kind of naive and stupid.
I really don't know what to say when it comes to these things, because as far as political debate, as far as what I can see, look at the amount of people that actually vote. What is it? Last election, 1 out of 5? The presidential election was the only one that really mattered in a lot of ways. Maybe it didn't. I guess that's my whole point. It didn't matter. There was no real, very few people voted in the last election. And a real basis of that is that there are very few things to vote for.
Well, that's true.
There's very little difference.
Everything is so muffled by the time it gets to the voters. There's no black and white issues,
And it's funny, they might even say that, like Reagan was anti-Department of Education, so that we still have that kicking around. But you look at people like Carter, worker safety, fine, we have to support OSHA, but that was the administration that took apart OSHA. Generally, they cut their funding in half. You look at leasing of federal lands. They're talking about what? I know that the Department of Interior under Carter was horrendous as well. So in some ways, they might say one thing, and they do another. And I guess Americans. I guess you can go into this litany. You look at UAC. You look at McCarthy. You look at the scandals with JFK, the war, the Vietnam War, Johnson, and then Nixon. And the pardoning of Nixon, and then just the general wimpiness of Carter on a number of issues, mm-hmm. has just gotten people to the point where they don't want to vote, and you could see that. And I don't know, we're all over the place here, but I would guess that that's a reason why people don't vote, and why things are as silly as they are.
The question I really have, though, is have things changed a lot over the past few years? Let's go back to the 20s and 30s. How many people voted then? What percentage? Was it a lot?
I don't have the stats in front of me, but I would assume that it was a little greater, because I know the general trend has been a decline. I guess the only election where we've really had an upswing was the 64 election with when Johnson was running, when there was a huge registration drive among blacks in northern cities and in the South. But I know that was one of the only periods where there was a significant rise in the amount of voters, and I think it's been steadily declining ever since.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know in other countries, when they have elections, a lot of people vote. It's looked upon as, something really important to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I see a lot of hypocrisy here, because the same people who back out of voting, okay, and the same people who back out of jury duty are the same people who say, well, if you don't want to register for the draft, why don't you go to another country, Now, which is it? You know, are we going to be consistent here? Are we going to support all of, you know, the alleged responsibilities of a citizen, or are we just going to support the ones that are convenient at the moment?
I don't know.
Elections may be meaningless, but why are they meaningless?
I think it just comes down to, you know, whether or not people want to take an active role in getting involved in the process. I guess it's a problem that no one really wants to be co-opted and wants to work. I guess the original point, no one wants to work within a structure at this point when it comes down to politics, because you got to swallow your own pride. And I mean, you got to get this general worldview. And you see, that's the thing that frightens me about one central worldview. I mean, that's what Nazism and the fascism was all about. But I mean, it's really hard in a democracy, I guess, especially our democracy, where you have a significant problem with communications as far as free press. I think that's a real problem.
What problem?
People really don't know what's going on. People can't get organized. It's really hard for people to get organized these days.
What do you mean people don't know what's going on?
Well, let's see. Let's see if we can put this in a way. It's hard to form a consensus on any issue, and the only people that seem to exert political power at this point are the Democrats and Republicans. And in general, the Democrats and Republicans get a lot of their funding through PACs and through major labor unions and to a large extent on private donations. And I know I don't have $30 to spend on a political campaign. I know very few people that have that sort of money. So in a lot of ways, I think that the party process at this point is fairly stifled, because you don't have very many people actually in the running. And since we don't know about any other alternatives, even at our meager resources, I don't know, I know this is not congealing.
I understand the gist of what you're saying, and I think it's very big coincidence that always the people running for office tend to be these very rich people, you know?
Yeah, well, who else can afford to do it?
Like, right.
How many people can afford to do non-commercial rate? I mean, just look at our field and look at others. How many people can afford to actually go out and give of their time? It's very egalitarian to them, but I know one thing. I know they're not really getting any poorer being in those positions. And generally speaking, those people tend to support an economic relationship or a way which the government protects, who's ever putting it in. I mean, think about it. The people that are in office owe a great number of favors to the people that put them in office, because it's a direct relationship there. So I think since people don't have the power to put themselves in office, and we're not talking about any viable solutions, that's why inevitably those people are the people that get into office. I don't know if there's any way around it.
Is it a stalemate?
I think it is, because it's a matter of communications. Like, it's a matter of, wait, this is the way things are as far as political power. We have no political power unless we vote. Why don't we vote? Because we're apathetic. Why are we apathetic? Because we know it doesn't work. But if we all got together and talked about it and we realized that there were some alternatives, we could form them, then we would have some power.
Now, are you in turn taking it a step further, saying that of all the people who don't vote, what percentage is it?
I believe it's 1 out of 5.
So 20% we're talking about. 20% people who did not
vote. 1 out of 5 or 1 out of 4. 3 out of 4 people that are eligible.
Is that 20% saying that the system doesn't work?
20 to 25% that say that vote. And 75% that don't even bother. That can.
Wait a minute. Wait. Say that again slowly.
1 out of every 5 to 4. It's like 25, 23%, I guess, out of that election decided to vote. So that means 1 out of every 4 people, generally. 1 out of every 4.5 people.
1 out of every 4 decided to vote.
Even walk to that poll and pull the trigger.
So we're talking about 75% then that didn't vote.
That had the right, that could have voted.
75% of the people, in your opinion, are saying that the system does not work?
I don't know. It seems as though they don't have enough time. I know that's very scary. That's what I mean. Is it that they're apathetic? Obviously, because if people thought that, that what they had to say mattered, they'd be there, right? I know that you give someone an opportunity to talk, I know they won't shut up. I mean, look at it like people at a very, on a microcosm sort of basis.
Okay, we got another call, and we're going to try to go over to Delay Land again. So let's give it a shot.
This is WUSB Stony Brook. Give us a call, 246-7901.
And I hope we made it this time. It certainly would be nice if we are, in fact, here. I think we are. We have a call, and in fact, we're going to go to that call at this very moment. USB, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Lee from Smithtown.
Hi, Lee from Smithtown.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
How are you, John?
Oh, pretty good. How are you?
I'd like to know why, what you guys think about what the reason is people don't go to vote.
Well, that's a hard question. Well, I guess that's a real difficult question. Why don't you? You have to ask yourself, why didn't you vote?
Did you vote?
No, I wasn't old enough last time.
Ah, okay, that's a good reason.
But would you vote now?
Yeah.
Now, who would you vote for?
Well, I don't think that's relevant.
Let me follow through. Who did you vote for? I mean, who would you vote for?
Who would you have voted for?
Who would I have voted for?
I guess so, yeah.
That's a good question.
Would you have felt confused? Do you think that the people that were on the ballot, would you say that you generally agreed with them? Would you have liked, was it something that you could say, wow, I really support Carter or I really support Reagan? Could you have said that to the point where you really believed it?
No, there wasn't a candidate that I really supported that I really liked.
Well, now, what would you look for in a candidate?
I'd look for someone who's honest and who's going to do the job, you know.
But, well, I think they all claim that, don't they?
They all claim that, you know.
How could you tell?
But if you look at their records, I probably would have supported Carter over Reagan, but, you know, it's like...
But would you have felt good about it? Would you have felt good about it? That's what I mean. I mean, would it have been something that, you know, after you... It wasn't... Let's say the vote wasn't the best... If it wasn't a vote of the best of... You know, the worst of two evils? Yeah. I mean, was it something that... if you weren't so vehemently anti-Reagan, would you really want to pull that lever for either? For Carter?
Could you repeat that? I didn't hear you.
Would you have voted for Carter... if you hadn't been so anti-Reagan, I mean, would you have liked to? Was it something that this is the man that represents what I believe in? What, do you follow what I'm trying to get at?
Not exactly, but if Reagan hadn't been running, I would have probably voted for someone other than Carter.
But it all generally comes down to who's worse.
Yeah.
Who should I keep out? Well, that doesn't... Well, would you say that's a healthy view?
No, not at all.
Do you think that might contribute to the reason why people just don't bother to vote?
Yeah, but still, that's no reason for them to not vote.
I would agree with you, but I'm trying to say, well, if you thought it didn't work, if you thought it was just a matter of voting for the lesser of two evils, in a lot of ways, why vote? I mean, really?
Yeah, I understand what you're getting at.
That's what I'm saying. A lot of people, you know, they don't buy... I mean, when you look... what I was trying to say before was, if you look at Carter and Reagan, there is a definite difference, more of an ideological public relations sort of difference in a lot of ways. I mean, the way I see it.
Yeah, but,
I know
but how much of a relevant difference?
I don't believe that there's... I mean, I'd say there's a trend. There was a conservative trend coming in America, and in some ways... Yeah, Reagan, as far as I'm concerned, from my political background, is definitely more less desirable than Carter. But then again, I saw the trends coming in Carter. I mean, even within his administration, as far as deregulation, that occurred.
Well, now,
it began during his. So in a lot of ways, as far
who,
as my,
who started draft registration, it was Carter.
Yeah.
Okay. Who boycotted the Olympics? It was Carter. You know, in a sense, I see a lot of things that the two of them do that
and
are very similar.
And you mustn't forget the grain embargo.
Grain embargo, fine. The thing is, Carter.
Lack of arms control.
Carter represents one thing. Reagan represents the other. The two as individuals, though, I don't see as being that far apart.
I would say so, and that would be a reason why I wouldn't want to vote for either of them. That's why I didn't vote for either of them. I knew I was, you know, throwing my vote to the wind when I wrote in Commodore. Matter of fact, the people at the voting place didn't even want me to write the vote in. They gave me a hassle. I said, "Well, where should I?" They didn't even want to tell me. Oh, do you really want to do this? Because I don't want to have to count it. Is what they said. This is how he used to talk it.
Really?
Yeah. But, you know, I wouldn't want to, I didn't vote the last election. And I feel bad about it now, but I mean, I look at it and I say, well, why? I didn't have anything to vote for. There was no choice, really. It was like, okay, I'll put the Democrats in and I'll feel just as ripped off. I don't know. It just seems that way. You know, I think at this point, Reagan says he has a mandate. And I'm saying if Carter had run on that ticket and had that same mandate, I think he might have done the same thing because I think they both represent... groups of interest that have a little more political power than I do, and than the rest of us 75% that don't care to vote.
The way I look at it is that you have two candidates with all of their, you know, all of their promises and their platforms and their view of life, and what you're forced to do is fit yourself into one of two other pictures, you know, neither of which corresponds to, for example, my life, you know. So great, Reagan's all whacked out about the Russians. Carter was all whacked out about human rights. You know, neither of those things is relevant to me.
Well, I think, I don't know, if you ask my personal opinion on this, I see no reason why we have to just, like, bend ourselves out of shape as far as this political view. I don't know. I see that there's such strength in just the American ideology that was espoused by Jefferson. You know, I don't even think you have to look very far. I think the answers are very clear-cut. It's like, I guess, if you want to be religious, Christianity, I mean, they've used Christianity to justify murders, but when you look at, when you boil it down, there's some real things that are inherent within the American viewpoint as espoused by our founding fathers. And I don't think, and even people as recently as FDR, and you see it all the time, I think people know what's right. I don't even think there's a problem as far as arms control and all. I don't think we need to go very far. I don't know why they're distorting it. That's my problem.
Sir, I want to thank you for calling. We have another call now.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Our telephone number is 246-7901. You are listening to WUSB Stony Brook. USB, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
First, I'd like to present an example of voting in action. And I'd like to follow that with a question on how we could reform it. In 1982, in Juneau, Alaska, they had a 100% turnout of the electorate. The reason they had it was because they were discussing moving the state capital from Juneau to central Alaska. Now, is it worthwhile to put big issues like that on the ticket? Is that what we need to bring out? And is it possible that we could use the new electronic technology that's coming out now to allow people to vote from their homes? Do you think that would spur interest in the political process?
I certainly think it might, but there's a real danger, and this is a field that I work in, and this is a real problem. There's great promise. Everyone's been saying, wow, two-way interactive cable, it's going to make life different, and we're going to have what we want, the services we want. But, I mean, just let's look at the pay entertainment channels that are available. In a lot of ways, I don't see anything really happening. As far as information, the most, I guess, open view towards educational and, you know, entertainment programming, you know, who's really doing it? I mean, is there really anything that's, I'd say, you know, outside the norm? You know, I would like to see, you know, a station, I guess a video station that did something along these lines, like USB, you know. I mean, pretty much was more of an open alternative, because I know there's a lot of really wild stuff going on, but I don't see it. And if that's any representative case of people being more informed, I don't think that's going to happen. And secondly, there's a real economic problem when you look at interactive cable, but I guess we'll go into it in
a
minute.
Well, let's explore the concept of electronic voting, because I think that's pretty interesting. Now, right now, they're working on two-way communications and cable.
They have it in Cincinnati.
Cincinnati, yeah, I believe it's the... Yeah,
it's a Cube system. They're moving it to Houston, and there's another in another city in Ohio. There's about four of those systems.
Now, I've heard allegations that cable companies are becoming more and more like phone companies, where it's possible to actually trace what program somebody watched at a certain time.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's possible, won't it be possible to trace what vote somebody cast?
Well, that's
through the home TV.
Assuming we can put safeguards on the system.
Well, yeah, that's with the there's legislation pending. I won't get into this legislation right now. Well, maybe I should later on after we speak about this. But there's legislation pending in Congress that will protect information like that.
Well, my question is really, do you trust the people enough to give them the power?
I do, as long as they have enough information sources that are diverse.
Do you trust them to go and look for them? I mean, we have a really high illiteracy rate in this country, despite public libraries and despite free public education. Even if you provide information, that's no guarantee people are going to use it.
Sure, but the thing is, you have to trust them, because they're us. You know,
concept?
We trust them now, we use representatives.
Well, I can't trust... You see, I would have to say, yes, there are some issues where you have to know a lot about things in order to you make a decision. You really can't say, well, you know, should we sell grain to the Russians? And if it has a serious impact on whether or not we get enough phosphates for our fertilizers, I mean, there's a lot of questions that, you know, should be removed from people in some ways, long-term decisions. But I think generally speaking, on major issues, yeah, you have to give power to the people as far as that's concerned. And I think it couldn't hurt. Think about it. If you had more people voting, it really couldn't hurt.
If you had them putting up more representatives, I can see it not being a major change in the system. But giving people power has been frightening for the last 2,000 years.
Sure. There's a real problem, and that's whether or not the people really have decent information to go on. That's my problem. And I think we have to take steps, especially, and this is a real problem. You know, when they formed the states, they had implicit in that there was going to be enough little newspapers. They had lots of little newspapers going around. They just didn't have one New York Times. They had lots of small papers. Now, with the Communications Act of 1934, they realized that it was going to take a role. It was going to take over that role, and there was a lot less spectrum space. So, you know, they had some safeguards. They had regulations, you know, the Fairness Doctrine, a number of things to protect people. But, you know, at this point, When you look at communications and communications mediums, the latest figure was 73% of all Americans rely on television as their main source of information, news.
Yeah, almost exclusively.
Now that is amazing when you look at this, really. Even if you consider cable news network and satellite news channel and independent network news, you're talking about six networks that are basically from the same point of view, that are producing and controlling everything. And they're major corporations, multi-million dollar corporations. And I don't care what you say. If you're a major corporation, you're interlocked with other corporations, and obviously you have a lot of interests in mind, you know, and a lot of interests that have a lot to do with your money.
Don't forget the McNeil Lehrer NewsHour underwritten by AT&T.
And National Public Radio has over 300 stations nationwide, which operates in a similar fashion the way you do, and is fairly open-minded.
Well, I think NPR is amazing. I really feel terrible about the fact that they're not doing better, but that's another issue.
We have to go to another call. Is there any other question you wanted to ask, sir?
Oh, no. It's been very good. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for calling. Our phone number is 246-7901. We're talking to John Vernile, a former USB-er who now lives in Massachusetts. And do you have a role that you could define yourself as fulfilling?
At this point?
Yeah.
Well, I just do communications consulting work when I can get it, you know. And at this point, I've just been reading a lot and analyzing the new changes in the communications technologies, trying to analyze this, where they might be coming from. But I guess my role is just to read and do whatever I can. I don't know.
You can survive. That's
if
great.
I could, that's a good description. If I could survive.
Again, our phone number is 246-7901, area code 516.
That's a good description.
It's one of the reasons why I'm in it.
USB, you're on the air.
Hi. I was listening to your program, and I was wondering whether you thought maybe if the U.S. switched to a parliamentary system, a third party might be a more viable means of input, third, fourth, fifth parties.
I think that's a great idea.
Political system.
You want to know why? This is funny. I first had the idea introduced to me by Howard K. Smith, who was speaking at the National Press Club, but through NPR. And he spoke about that. I don't know if everyone's familiar with the parliamentary system in some ways, but what you have is you have a large body. You don't elect according to districts. Oh, okay. Hello. Goodbye.
Okay, thank you for the radio.
Thank you for the question. You elect by party and not necessarily by district. So let's say, you know, it's funny because you get squeezed. If you're a conservation kind of thing, like Barry Commoner, mm-hmm. and you only get 1% of the vote, but you're all over the place, you don't get anything. You don't even get a seat because things are done by little communities or one big election for president. So in other words, in your community, you might have 5,000 people and only 200 people are into the Citizens Party. You won't have anyone to represent you. But in a parliamentary system, which is a little different, you elect at large candidates. So in other words, if there is, you know, 100 million people that are voting in the United States and 300,000 decided they wanted a person from the Citizens Party, and that equaled two candidates with two seats, then at least you'd have some voice. I think in a lot of ways that's a good way, but it's
and
not...
And that voice could prove itself over the years, and eventually people would see it working and maybe put more mm-hmm. of them in. Okay, let's go to this call. USB, you're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to mention, if I may, the difference between the two-party system that we have between the Democratic and the Republican parties that basically we do have. I know we're supposed to have the other two parties, the liberal and the conservative. Usually, it's interesting how the conservative will almost all the time link with the Republican, and the liberal will almost all the time link with the Democratic. And I'd just like to point out, at least this is how I understand it, that it seems that those who follow the Democratic Party process believe in a philosophy that power should be distributed from central government to individuals and people and to the local state authorities, whereas those who are Republican or conservative-minded believe just the opposite.
I personally don't buy that.
Power should be given from the local authorities and from the individuals and centralized to the main government or to the one big government.
Sure. I know what you're saying. I don't buy it because I see the same activity. I mean, Democrats have their patronage. You know, they have their people that they serve, their relatives or whatever, and the Republicans have theirs. And I see I could see that Democrats have generally been, I guess not generally, but since the 30s and such, or actually earlier with Smith and on back, they tend to be a little more progressive, a little more egalitarian in their view. I'd say yes as far as a party is concerned generally, but in local communities, I don't see that. I don't know. They're just it's really hard to tell. Knowing in my communities in Westchester, I see very little difference. Just, you know, different people got different government contracts. So, you know, it's different people. But, I mean, the same stuff happens. At least I think so. What do you think, Eric?
I agree. It's
6 of 1, half dozen of the other.
Yeah, well, local politics is almost as confusing as national. And almost as frustrating, too.
Why would you say then, let's say, for instance, in the South, we would have more of a tendency for people to want to believe in more of a Democratic Party process rather than a Republican? You know, having lived in Mississippi for about a year, and myself being a native New Yorker, I did notice that the expression down there many times was "Republicans be damned."
Well, I think that might be just a leftover from the Civil War. I really think so. That's what Dixiecrats. You look at the Dixiecrats.
Very good point.
Yeah, that's. I think they're really. It seems almost hereditary, you know. But that. I mean, look at the Dixiecrats. They were no different. And even people like McGovern. Not McGovern. My God. What's the fellow that was shot? I have a block here.
Reagan?
Not Reagan.
The Pope?
The other. It seems like everyone's being shot these days. George Wallace.
Oh, George Wallace, yes.
And those other people. I'm basically, you might even call them reactionary Republicans on some ways. Maybe not in other ways. They're very gutsy. I. This might be strange. People might burn me at the cross for this, but I have a tendency to think that, not that I agree, by no means do I agree with their philosophy, political philosophy, but people like Wallace, at least they're up front. Their issues are very, now I'm not going to say personable, but I mean they relate to people that are smaller generally.
I guess politicians getting shot out, getting shot at comes under our listing of equal opportunity.
My belief is that they're generally racist and very simple in terms of their view of the world, but I think that as far as local support and grassroots networks, I think they've made strides, or at least that particular era, they made great strides. That was stuff that I'd like to see the Democratic or whatever party do today.
Thanks for calling, sir.
Okay.
Our telephone number is 246-7901. We're talking with John Verniel on today's edition of Chatterbox. And I didn't really want to spend the whole time talking about politics, it is a rather interesting subject.
I wish we get some more calls. I would like to.
Okay, you hear that, folks?
I mean, just give us your opinion, because I think that's part of the process. It's, you know, even if you're completely erratic, and I mean, as far as, you know, you see that you're totally outside of mainstream politics, I guess it's important, you know, leftists, people that are reactionary or, you know, somewhere in between. You know, it's really important for us to talk about it, because I guess the one thing that, at least I feel, the strength of this country originally was based on, its Jeffersonian concept, is a spirit of compromise, that you can work things out and you could have a little bit of everything and everyone could get their fair share. And I think that's where the strength lies. But that only starts with calls. let's get some calls.
Yeah.
See if we get some. It's 246-7901?
Yep, that's the phone number. Area code 516. I like to, last few weeks, of course, a lot of people have been talking about the Korean Airlines incident. What, have any feelings on that? Strong feelings one way or the other?
I didn't, you know, I was really... At first.
Great conversation piece.
Well, I know.
One of the most amazing ones in
light years. We might have talked it to death. I don't know. My first reaction was I wanted to strangle a Russian who gave that order. I think it was totally apprehensible that someone should do something like that in this day and age. I think it's absolutely absurd. On the other hand, after thinking about it for a while, I said, my God, look how paranoid these people are, that they're willing to do something like that. I mean, even cocky, to do something like this and, you know, run the risk of starting a nuclear war. And then I realized that, hey, we got to do something about limiting nuclear arms, or at least finding a way of coexisting. I'm not saying that I trust the Russians at all. You know, I believe we have to start something that could at least get them out of the state of paranoia. I don't know if we can do that because they're two competing economic systems, but I'd like to explore new ways. But I don't know. I was really angry. But I didn't realize how close we were to a war. Think about it. It's really scary.
How much of a threat are the Russians really to the United States? Is it the same thing as McDonald's being a threat to Burger King, Pepsi being a threat to Coke? I mean, it seems as if we need each other more than anything else. Yeah. If there wasn't the Soviet Union, who would we be attacking and condemning? China? You know, India?
I don't know. That sounds like Orwell. Orwell talked about that, and I buy that argument completely, that you always have to have someone that you could work against, you know, pivot against.
Let's go back a little bit before the Soviet Union was big, okay?
Yeah.
Let's go into the 1800s. Who was big then?
Well, we weren't as big.
We were aspiring. Definitely weren't. Let's say Great Britain.
Well, I don't think...
It was Great Britain, and it was France,
yeah.
Usually. I mean, yeah. There was always two.
In recent history, this is one thing that comes to mind immediately, because Malcolm X said this, and it just made so much sense to me. It was in a film that I saw. Actually, a very brilliant man, mm-hmm. Very underrated as far as a political analyst, because he was involved in some really funny stuff. Not funny, but some real radical stuff early on, but he definitely became a little more mainstream. He said, well, you know, during World War II, this is, they had you, he said, speaking of the news media and generally government, they had you hating the Germans and hating the Japanese and loving the Russians and loving the Chinese. And after the war, they had you, just a few years later, they had you loving the Germans and Japanese and hating the Russians and hating the Chinese.
Look at World War II.
That's what I just mentioned.
Yeah. well, look today is what I'm saying.
Oh.
Does anybody hate the Germans anymore?
No.
And considering what the Germans did, is that less barbaric than what the Russians did to Flight 9, 7, 007? You know, it's...
No,
it seems like we're going
not.
In circles.
But the
like.
Thing that frightens me is that, you know, first thing, that they have to do these things, and secondly, how we're responding to these things. I mean, Reagan's popularity went up, what was it, 10 points? I don't know the figure, but I know it went up.
Well, look at Thatcher in the Falkland Wars.
And it's absurd. You know, first thing, I want to know who does these polls. I know it's Roper and these, but who does these polls? I mean, you know the way you could word a poll to make it seem like something else. But
we have coming up on our phone line, I believe, a direct line to the president.
This is the White House press office. This recording is not for broadcast.
Whoops, and we won't air it.
Okay.
They don't have anything today, but that's a good number to call, and they give you all kinds of speeches and things. But, yeah. I wanted to analyze something that Reagan said today, but he didn't say it yet.
Oh, he's not there today.
No.
I'm glad at least we get a recording.
Yeah.
A little more personalized government. This whole thing worries me, and I really wish we had more people talking about it. And it's really weird because people are frightened because they said, I guess either people are frightened or disgusted to talk about it. And I mean, we don't have community centers. We don't have local bars to go to and talk. I mean, a bar in the United States. I'm really speaking of the European bar in a sense. You know, the old saloon where people, used to go with their, this in Europe, people go out to a bar with their families because they have ice cream there, they have a coffee machine there, and people sit around drinking wine, drinking whiskey or coffee or tea, and the kids are running around the tables or outside, and they speak about politics all night long, and then they go home, but they talk to each other. I mean, what do we have right now? I mean, how many people, I'd like to ask everyone, how many people do you actually know and that you talk to all that often? Do you really see all that many people? Do we ever get together as a country and talk about things? We rely on the tube for almost everything, or the few friends that we have, or work.
But okay, now, an argument that will probably be used against that is that, sure, we don't talk about it all that much, but in this country we have stability. Now, look at a country like Italy, where they're always talking about things and going crazy, you know, with issues. And how many governments have they been through since World War II?
They're still there.
It's approaching 50 different governments.
It's still there. And I just know from personal experience, they're building apartment complexes for the people. Granted, there's high unemployment, but people aren't starving there. They're not on bread lines. People have places to live. I mean, things just aren't as crazy. I don't understand it. You know, it's like Sweden. You know, they complained that, wow, you spend a lot of money on your taxes there. But, I mean, everyone's fairly satisfied. Now, I don't understand why we can't be I don't understand why we can't be in that position. Mm-hmm. I don't really think we have all that much stability. What's our stability? I think our stability is our ignorance. We almost seem to exist as a country that's basically an armed fortress, a fortress, mm-hmm. and that's involved with the status quo in as far as the marketplace. I don't know what America is. What is America? I don't know. We don't talk about things. Land of the free. I don't know if I had more than four or five political conversations over the past month, and I think I talk a lot about it. Mm-hmm. You call that a land of the free when we're not talking? How could you be free if you don't know anything, when you don't know what other people are thinking?
People don't talk about politics, I think, because they feel it just doesn't get anywhere, even if you do say something.
Well, then that's a real problem.
Yeah.
That's something that we have to work out. I don't see... You see, this is a problem. Even as far as, you know, I guess it's really hard to get away from class talk, you know, when you talk about people that have money and people that don't. People that have money want to keep their money, and they do things to generally protect it in a lot of ways.
Well, unless you're an activist, that kind of stuff really comes out to your ears after a while, and you're
I know.
Pretty fed up talking about it all
and
the
in
time.
And in a lot of ways, I mean, we all want a better country. I don't care, you know. Even the wealthy people that I've spoke to and met, they want a better country, but they look around and they say, well, what's really happening? So I got to just protect myself and my family. So I understand their point of view, because there's a lot. It's not that there's like 20 people controlling the government. You know, there isn't. I it's a group of people, but generally, and it's a whole scale of people, I think, you know, people that have, you know, $100,000 houses to people that have 20 houses all over the world.
And of course, part of the problem is the mere size of the country. It's so huge. How can one person really expect to do anything? Now, you have a country like England or like Portugal or something. It's not all that big. And you have more input. Your voice means a little more because there are less of you. And it's easier to comprehend the whole thing.
I don't understand. You see, wouldn't it make a better world? You see, I'm not advocating the complete overthrow of the capitalist system at all. I don't.
Better not, because you can lose your driver's license if you do.
I know. I don't at all. What I'm saying is, you know, we have to redefine some aspects of the way we do business in the market. I mean, let's look at the way we manufacture cars. You know, why do we have to have a new car? Why is it falling apart? Come on, we know that we could build cars that last. I mean, we're getting to the point in technology where we can have a factory produce several different items, so we don't have a problem where a factory is laid over. I think making the country a better place will benefit wealthy people and middle-class people and poor people generally, saying...
But not immediately.
Immediately.
That's where the problem is. People want immediate gratification, and if they can't have it, then they'll prolong what they have for as long as possible, and I think that's what you're seeing now. Of course, we can have perfection from factories, except a lot of people aren't going to have jobs because robots will be doing it for them. And if people don't have jobs, then that's pretty much thought of as being unemployed and being without any source of income. However, in a few decades or so, it can probably be worked out so that no one will be working.
Yeah, well, it's moving in that direction, and that's the thing that frightens me. It's, you know, how, you know, so we'll work 30 hours a week, we'll work 20 hours a week. So why do we have to work 20? I mean, why do we have to work 40 hours a week? It makes no sense to me in a lot of ways. because, you know, we have all this mechanization. I don't, you see, I mean, we create new services. That's what we do in this country. You know, after we're doing things more efficiently, it doesn't take 100 people to work on a farm to produce enough food. It now takes 20 people for that same amount. You know, even when you consider the manufacturing process, it's so like a drop in one-fifth of the workforce. So we create things. I'll say, well, what about creating things that make sense, that make better use of the world's resources, and, you know, take some short-term losses for some long-term gains?
It's sad, really. Once again, we have 7 minutes left in case anyone wants to call. It's phone number 246-7901, area code 516. It's rather sad because I think people are afraid of something, of having free time to do what they want to do and not knowing what that is. And it's, you know, when you're told to do something, when you're told to go to school and then told to go to work and then told to do God knows what, you're suddenly faced with all this time where you can, you know, create stuff, do whatever you want. And people don't know where to begin, and they try to avoid it as much as possible.
Well, I just really wish that we could at least speak about this. At this point, it seems as though we're on a blind course, like this big giant that's just blinded and just has no where it's going, and it's like rolling down a hill at the same time.
Are you talking about America or the human race?
It's definitely the race, but speaking of America, I see it as America, and I think America has this real, we're in a real important position. At this point, I'm glad to see the Europeans are on top of things, too. I can't say, well, we're the real hope for the planet. I don't buy that. I mean, it's a nice, you know, real nationalistic thing that needs to die with everything else, I think, in the long run. But in a lot of ways, I'd like to see at least some more planning effort on the part of all bright and interested people. You know, people that are knowledgeable, people that want to help, and I think there needs to be foundation support at least initially for studies at this point. I mean, not just from the Brookings Institution and Rand Corporation or Columbia University. I mean, out of cheesy places like Stony Brook or a consortium of all
cheesy places like Stony Brook. Wait a minute.
I'm just joking.
You're not going to make it out the door like that.
Listen, it's more of a personal joke. I got my BA here, BS here.
You got a lot of that, yeah.
I think we really need a cooperative, a real cooperative world effort. But at this point, we need to do research, and then we got to talk about it. We just got to talk about it. But if not, you know, we're headed for the tubes, I think.
I think one thing we need, and we need it bad, is contact with another race.
I think so.
I think the time has come that we just discovered a planet around, what star was that? I forget what star
Betelgeuse.
It was. No, it wasn't Betelgeuse. It was Vega. That was it. Planets around Vega. Okay. I mean, that was downplayed so much. All these things happening in space are being downplayed. Halley's Comet's going to be here in 2 years, you know. We're not doing anything about it.
Sending up a flyby.
No.
Think about the human spirit.
Yeah. Now, it's obviously... It's there for a purpose. It's there for us to explore and to find more answers and solve more problems. But I guess it was the same when the ocean existed. To cross the ocean, there was reluctance there too.
Yeah, you always have to be banging on doors that aren't even doors. I guess you always have to be looking, because I guess that's how the human mind just takes jumps.
Yeah, and today I just see it being stifled. People saying, "Well, there are so many problems here. There are always going to be problems here, folks. You know, we're never going to solve them all." There's just no way we're going to solve them all. And if we don't start looking for other things while some of our problems are still unsolved, then we're never going to get out of the quagmire.
Okay, well, we'll send you away to a planet, and maybe we can...
I want to see the space. I really do. I want to be on that space show. I want to be able to see stars without an atmosphere.
Well, that's another committee we need.
And I think it's my right. I think it's your right. I think it's everybody's right to be able to...
We have to set up
to
another...
Go for that.
We'll set up a committee in part of this, you know, world evaluation plan to deal with this. Oh, I know there's one group, the Institute for World Order. It's, I guess, a neo-Rockefeller sort of interest group with people from Harvard School of Business.
World Order?
Yeah, Institute for World... they're interested in world government, sort of like the trilateral approach to, you know, very, very planned, very... capital intensive with the U.S. on top sort of view. Well, not the U.S. I keep confusing that. I'd say the fairly wealthy maintaining their position. Boy, that's
well,
a...
It's
a point.
It's interesting. You know when we get out there, it's going to be the same thing all over again. There'll be superpowers with the planets and you know, communist star systems and galaxies and things like that. And it's, you know, we're going to see the whole thing all over again, and probably not even, that won't even be the end. It'll probably keep going after that.
Well, I'd like to see a sub-up.
Universes fighting against each other, and it will just keep getting bigger and bigger until we reach the pinnacle of it all. And after it's all over, we'll see written on a scrap of paper somewhere that we have found through all this the answer.
Send more Chuck Berry.
Is 7. And it'll all be over then. The answer will be 7. We'll know that much. And
you're a numerologist.
Yeah.
No,
there's a purpose to all this.
I really think we got to solve our problems here.
First?
I'm not saying that we should stop going out. I think that we should get together. I mean, if it's everyone's duty to, I think it's everyone's duty not to go out and vote, but to go out and talk.
Yeah.
With as many people, with as many different people as you can, whether it be in a university or in a strange bar in South Boston. I don't know. I just hope that one day that'll happen. You know, and I think the one day is like right now. I don't know what to do. And it's funny. I think that we need to rely on the people that are very well educated, people that are wealthy, to really get any movement together. I think that the ball's in their court. I mean, they run government, they run the media, they have all the money. You know, I think in a lot of ways it stands. Think about it. We're all looking for foundation support. And what is that saying? Mm-hmm. We really can't do it on our own. You know, and we are stifled as a country. So in some ways, we are relying upon the upper crusts.
Well, John, I want to say thanks for being with us today on Chatterbox. And good luck up in Massachusetts in Belchertown.
No, I'm not in Belchertown anymore.
Oh, you're not in Belchertown anymore? Oh, okay. Well, then good luck wherever you end up from Belchertown. And good luck in life.
Thank you.
Tune in again next week, 2:30 p.m. for Chatterbox, and we'll be talking with somebody else. I'd like to remind you, tomorrow afternoon at 2:30, join host Art Dietrich as he talks to some local business people on It's Your Business, right here on USB.
And if you have goat, you put them in a pen. And if you have a rooster, you must have a hen now. Zungo, zungo, go, zungo, zeng. Zungo, zungo, go, zungo, zeng. Jump for happiness and jump for joy. You know fi call yellow man no boy. Lady and they used to take fi tie. Brave like Lord, them call him child. You know fi call yellow man no boy. You know fi call John John no boy. You know fi take iron knife boy. Zungo zungo go zungo zeng. Watch it. Zungo zungo go zungo zeng. Catch it. Zungo zungo go zungo zeng. Ka 00119. Ka yellow man make you feel so fine. Me cha-cha me lyric. Me chat them in a rhyme. Me not eat like me full up a rhyme. Ka yellow man him not commit no crime. Ka zungo zungo go zungo zeng. Zungo zungo go zungo zeng. Hey, go shum pen, go shum pen, hey, Kushushushumpeng. Say if you have a start, you must have a end. Say if you have a paper, you pass me the pen. But tell your yellow man I'm too much girlfriend. Can't offer the matter, but me not a no girlfriend. You are idiot, boy, me have a 110. Say all of them have yellow children. All of them have yellow children. Some live a Kingston, and don't have me a pen. None of them ask me, oh, me have enough girlfriend. Two arguments, I have enough arguments, Lord. Arguments, I have enough arguments. Me enter in the House of Parliament. Prime Minister and his wife have to keep silent. A true yellow man, a chat intelligent. They put me in the court, the judge say you're innocent. Two arguments, I have enough arguments. Sanja should have been with me girlfriend, hey. Lady Annie should have been my girlfriend. Make a zungo, zungo, go, zungo, zen, hey. You know fi jump fi happy or joy. You know fi call yellow man no boy. Nobody take John Joffy toy. Me brother in law them call him Uri. Zungo, zungo, go, zungo, zen. Watch it, yo. Zungo, zungo, go, zungo, zen. You like a violence. You smoke ice chain. You ding it violence. You go down silence. But tell your yellow man come fi tell them again. You live a Kingston or you live a Maypen. Say if you have a rooster, you must have a hen. And if you have a star, you must have a hen. But watch yellow man come fi rock them again, Lord. Zungo, zungo, go, zungo, zeng. Watch it. Zungo, zungo, go, zungo, zeng. Hey, jumpy happy, Mr. Jumpy John. You know fi take yellow man fi boy. You know fi take yellow man fi time. Zungo, zungo, go, zungo, zeng. Watch it. Zungo, zungo, go, zungo, zeng. Hey, kushung peng, kushushushung peng. But tell your yellow voice, it sound like FM. The other rest of voice sound like AM. But tell your yellow man come fi rock them again. You coulda live a Kingston, Moby a Maypen. Zungo, zungo, go, zungo, zeng, hey. Zungo, zungo, go, zungo, zeng, hey. No fi call yellow man, no boy. You fi jumpy happiness and jumpy joy. Zungo, zungo, go, zungo, zeng. Cause yellow man have enough girlfriend. Cause watch a man make up fi tell them again. Cause yellow man come fi mash them again, Lord.
Cause these things unto judge and all pleases. And every day them a worship vanities. And your greatest lust is jewelries. Mind your licking with diseases. hey, mind ya lick you with diseases. The most dangerous diseases. I said the most dangerous diseases. I'm talking like the elephantitis. The other one is the poliomyelitis. Arthritis and the one diabetes. You see, cause every day that I turn the Bible pages. From Proverbs forward to Genesis. From Revelation to Ecclesiastes. But let me tell you, say my wisdom increases. And the loss of the world, it decreases. While every day man I build explosives. The corruption of the world, it exposes. Mind ya lick you with diseases. Mind ya lick you with diseases. I said the most dangerous diseases. Elephantitis. The other one is the poliomyelitis. Arthritis and the one diabetes. You see, while the stars that shine from the galaxies, and it shines on human faces. Hear the cry of the Israelite voices, who once led by the man Moses. Jah, we need your advice. Hey, help us out of the crisis. Hey, Jah, we need your advice. Hey, help us out of the crisis. You see. Vanities. And your greatest lust is jewelry. Hey, Jah, you feel lick them with diseases. Jah, you feel lick them with diseases. I said the most dangerous disease.